Good morning to Asia correspondent Elizabeth Beattie, who's a journalist at Thomson Reuters based in Hong Kong. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Catherine.
South Korea, goodness, it had been going really well, but has had a spike in COVID-19 cases. Have we learnt a little bit more about how that's happened, Elizabeth?
Yes, we have. So you're right, South Korea has kind of been celebrated internationally for how it's handled the COVID-19 outbreak. You know, with a population of more than 51 million, it's only had 260 deaths and just over 10,000 confirmed cases. And much like New Zealand, we are beginning to see South Korea has started relaxing its restrictions somewhat. But it did see that setback recently with a new cluster of cases that were traced back to Seoul's popular Itaewon district. So there's been more than 119 cases that were linked to several nightclubs in the district, which had just reopened after these restrictions were eased. And a 29-year-old man who was unaware he had the virus, he was believed to have visited these nightclubs and unwittingly spread the virus while he was out, and then only felt unwell after the fact and then subsequently was tested. But we're also seeing now local media have referred to these as gay clubs and have released personal details of the new patient. And there's been reports that have apparently given details of his place of work and the district where he lives. And then online we've seen quite a hostile homophobic reaction in response to the new outbreak. And this has contributed to kind of there being a bit of a climate of fear around receiving COVID-19 testing. So initially there was only a small number of individuals who were seeking out testing who had been to the Itaewon district, and many of believe this is because of the stigma that exists around being gay in South Korea. But now authorities have introduced anonymous testing, and we've seen a sudden spike in the number of those who are seeking testing at the moment. And of course, South Korean officials are also using digital detective work in order to locate those who may have visited the nightclubs. But you know, for the LGBT plus individuals in South Korea, it's quite a difficult situation because they face not only fear of testing positive for COVID-19, but also fear of this having their personal details leaked by local media as well.
It's the trust and the confidence in coming forward and getting tested and reporting is so important in all this, isn't it?
For sure. And there's hopes that this will lead to kind of a little bit more empathy and a broader conversation. But at the moment, police are really relying on that digital detective work to fill in the gaps, and local support groups and rights bodies are just encouraging everyone to go and be tested and to take those precautions needed.
In Hong Kong, the contentious national anthem bill is back on the table and the protests have started up again. Remind us what this is, Elizabeth.
Sure. So this is a bill which, you rightly said, is very contentious. It makes mocking the Chinese national anthem punishable by a 3-year jail term and a hefty fine. So a lot of countries and jurisdictions do have kind of national anthem bills similar to this. But what is being considered kind of slightly out of step with the norm is that 3-year jail term. So when I was quite new to Hong Kong back in 2017, this national anthem bill was actually being discussed back then. And, you know, it's kind of surreal to think, you know, I was interviewing politicians and activists who were very concerned about this being an oppressive piece of legislation. And now we've seen it come up again, but albeit in a very different political climate. So just earlier this month, we saw lawmakers actually get into a physical altercation over the bill after a pro-Beijing politician kind of surrounded by security, seized control of the Legislative Council chair and banished pro-democracy members. And so on the street, this kind of tension trickled out. And we're only seeing protests and the political situation here grow more heated. And, you know, on Mother's Day just passed, we again saw police targeting journalists who were attempting to cover a small protest. And there were really ugly scenes as, you know, journalists wearing reflective, clearly marked press gear were targeted with tear gas at really close range. So many journalists here are really dismayed to see that pattern continue. And One 12-year-old student reporter who'd been covering the protest, he was taken away by police, and police said he was involved in this, you know, phrase, illegal child labor, and he's later released without being charged. And when he was released, he tearfully told media, you know, Happy Mother's Day. So events like this have really kind of triggered an outcry in social media. And next month, it'll be a year since the so-called summer of protests began. So we are expecting to see further protests ramping up in the coming months. And of course, we're always thinking ahead to the September elections later this year in Hong Kong.
Indeed. To Taiwan now, and it's continuing in its bid to be included in the World Health Organization. Several countries, including New Zealand, are supporting that, and this is causing friction too.
Exactly, yeah. So a very, very heated topic at the moment. So Taiwan is continuing to ramp up its campaign to be included in the World Health Organization's upcoming World Health Assembly meeting, which is later this month. And just for some context, so Taiwan considers itself an independent country, while China claims Taiwan as its province with no right to independent diplomatic representation. So unsurprisingly, China strongly opposes this bill by Taiwan to be included. But any politician commenting on this has found themselves in something of a political minefield. And we recently saw diplomatic sparks fly after Foreign Minister Winston Peters said Taiwan should be allowed to enjoy the meeting as an observer, given its success in handling the COVID-19 outbreak. And then, unsurprisingly, we kind of saw there be quite a sharp, quick response from China's foreign ministry spokesperson. And we've seen that quite a lot when individuals do speak out about this. We're seeing that instant kind of response from China's foreign ministry. And now New Zealand, like the US, follows the One China policy. So it diplomatically recognizes China's position that there's only one Chinese government. But the US at the same time has also been a very strong supporter of Taiwan's campaign to be involved in the upcoming meeting. And Asia, meanwhile, Taiwan and further abroad, Taiwan has really been celebrated for the way it's handled the outbreak. It's, you know, got a population of 23.78 million and has just had 440 cases of COVID-19 reported and just 7 deaths. So comparatively, quite impressive numbers. Because Taiwan was very quick, of course, to implement kind of tech measures, and they upped their mass production very early on. And we saw this very proactive approach from Taiwan. But we also saw Taiwan kind of posing questions very early on to the World Health Organization about human-to-human transmission. And they've reportedly had their questions ignored. So now we've seen a top U.S. government commission on China has kind of come out and said lives were lost to the pandemic because of the World Health Organization's exclusion of Taiwan and its kind of refusal to allow it to share best practices. So the outcome of Taiwan's campaign, it'll be very interesting to see, and it's something in Asia we'll be watching very closely.
There's so much geopolitics all over the place with this pandemic, isn't it? Yeah.
Very much.
Thank you, Asia correspondent Elizabeth Beattie, who is a journalist at Thomson Reuters and based in Hong Kong.